on Annenberg Radio News.
Who I am? No. I know who I'm not. I'm no longer homeless downtown.
We'll hear from a veteran who runs a program that she says saved her life. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, March 10th, 2011. I'm Megan Dickey. A Los Angeles judge today ordered Bell's former city administrator and his top deputy to stand trial on charges of misappropriating millions of dollars from the city. Robert Rizzo will face more than 50 counts of fraud. His former top assistant, Angela Spaccia, is charged with 4 counts of improper use of public funds. They will be arraigned March 24th. Christina Garcia is from the Bell Association to Stop the Abuse. She believes this is a step in the right direction.
There's been a lot of anxiety about whether or not the charges were going to be dropped, but I think everyone's breathing a sigh of relief that the trial is moving forward and hopefully there'll be restitution in the near future.
In Tuesday's election, Bell voters elected an entirely new city council. Garcia hopes its members will include the community in their future decision-making. After 7 months of investigating the double homicide of a Los Angeles couple, the LAPD has no suspects. Today, police officials and Councilwoman Jan Perry announced a hefty reward for information on the case. Dave Duhlberg has more.
At 3:30 a.m. on August 4th, Jarrell and Salima Wilborn were driving near Slauson Avenue and Main Street in South Los Angeles. At the intersection, they were shot multiple times and fatally crashed into a nearby pole. Salima was a longtime social and legal activist in Los Angeles, and her husband has been active in their local church for over 20 years. 7 months later, Salima's daughter Ursula Ventura says her mother is still deeply missed.
If something happened, she was always there. There was never a moment that if I had a question about cooking, I could call her any from the smallest to the biggest thing.
Jarrell's niece, Trisha Wilborn, admits her uncle had a past criminal history, but insists he was thought of highly in the community.
My uncle, he never had enemies because my uncle was always a straightforward person. People loved him. Different cultures loved him.
It is unclear at this time if the couple was targeted. Gang activity in the community has the LAPD believing that fear may be preventing people from coming forward with information.
We do hope today leads to something new coming forward that will help in the investigation, either clarify some things or take us in a new direction.
That was LAPD Detective David Torres. He, along with the LA City Council, announced today that a $75,000 reward would be offered to anyone with information about the suspects. Fell Lead Detective Louis Calzadillas said the reward may provide the department with new information and the breakthrough they are desperately looking for.
Well, the reason we're putting it out now is because we've tried to work as much on the information we do have.
Okay.
So we're trying to put it out to the community. Hopefully they'll come forward with some more information to help us with the investigation.
Police officials said the reward will be in effect for the next 6 months. Reporting for Annenberg Radio News, I'm Dave Duhlberg.
Voters are still being counted for LA's District 8 City Council race. Bernard Parks claimed the majority of the votes in Tuesday's election, but his challenger hasn't conceded the seat. Stephanie Frischberg reports.
Incumbent Bernard Parks declared victory against Faresi Hogan Rolls, but he may have spoken too soon. According to the unofficial results posted late Tuesday night, the former police chief was reelected with 50.89% of the vote, but those numbers don't include the thousands of mail-in and provisional ballots. Outsider candidate Hogan Rolls is now refusing to concede the race until all the votes are counted. Maria Garcia with the city clerk's office says the margin between the two candidates is 1,100 votes, and at this point, every vote counts.
With a margin as close as Parks and Hogan Rolls currently have, the race can swing either way.
The District 8 City Council election has been one of the more high-profile races on the ballot this year. It was also the most expensive. Los Angeles public employee unions put their muscle and money behind Hogan Rolls in an attempt to unseat Councilmember Parks. Parks calls the LA labor unions bullies, and he sees his showing on Tuesday as a sign to keep fighting.
As long as the unions or any special interest believes that they can intimidate or bully or cause people to do what they want and spend that money, you're going to have those that are intimidated by it.
Hogan Rolls couldn't be reached for comment today, but she told me earlier this week that she sees the donations as representing the support of working families in the district who want to see change. Robert Stern is the president of the Center for Governmental Studies. He says the District 8 race has upped the tension between labor unions and city council.
The unions may not have defeated Parks, but they certainly sent a signal that if you cross them, they're going to go after you. And so my guess is that other council members who are not leaning towards the union way might have second thoughts because they see how much money the unions spent. On the other hand, he won. In a sense, they say if you go after the king, be sure you kill him.
The city clerk says it may be months before the final results are in. Stephanie Frischberg, Annenberg Radio News.
Today marks the third day of sardine cleanup in Redondo Beach. Crews have removed 35 tons of the silvery fish after thousands turned up on the water's surface mid-morning Tuesday. Biologists believe the fish were trapped in the harbor late Monday or early Tuesday, and the fish sucked up all the available oxygen and then died. Redondo Police Sergeant Phil Keenan says there are still fish on the ocean's floor.
A portion of the fish will not come up, and we have private industry here now. One is going to vacuum the bottom, the floor, and the other is going to use nets to try to capture a lot of the other fish that don't come to the surface.
They need to quickly capture the fish because dead fish on the bottom of the harbor floor could bring more problems.
Once the fish starts to decay, that creates bacteria. The bacteria also consumes oxygen, and that just means it's going to be longer before the ecosystem of the harbor goes back to a oxygenated system that can sustain sea life.
Once the fish are gathered, they will be recycled and sold back on the market as fertilizer and compost. And now it's time to get the lowdown on the weather. Mostly clear skies this evening, with some fog rolling into the night, lows in the 50s. And come tomorrow, you might want to wake up late to avoid those low clouds, but midday Friday will be sunny, with highs in the upper 60s. And it's going to be a similar story for Saturday, low clouds and fogs in the morning, and then partly cloudy later in the day, with highs in the 60s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, a student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison wants students nationwide to ditch school tomorrow. Find out why. Women veterans make up 7.5% of all American vets, and that number is growing. So are the problems faced by the women who served in the military. Veteran Renee Banton was addicted to crack and living on the streets. That all changed one Mother's Day. And now, she's helping women veterans get their lives on track, a struggle more intense than many they faced in the military. Emily Frost has her story.
It's a gray morning, and every seat in the living room of Mitchell House is taken. The residents, all women veterans, are attending a session on dealing with resentment.
But how do you know that's a resentment?
I'm just saying, I don't know.
Renee Banton is their leader.
People are trying to work on issues. They're trying to get this thing called recovery. They're trying to live it, practice it, i.e. fall off the bike, get back up.
It's her mission to help them get sober and get their lives on track. Many of the women are coming right from the streets. Not long ago, Renee found her way to Mitchell House, run by the nonprofit New Directions. It's in the Los Angeles neighborhood Mar Vista. An American flag waves from the porch. The lawn is mowed regularly. She'd been living on the streets of Skid Row for 10 years, doing just about anything to get high, even turning tricks.
And felt desperate. You know, just absolutely felt like, you know, this can't keep happening.
Renee decided to do something that would surprise everyone, including her. She borrowed a friend's phone and called her mom.
I want to give a Mother's Day gift. My best thinking was to call my mom and tell her, oh, I'm going to go into a treatment facility on Monday, which was following Mother's Day. The moment I said it, wondered to myself, why did you say something like that? You know, what have I done? And why did I do that? Probably knowing me up until that second before the phone call, I probably smoked up the last $10 or $15 I had, and perhaps God made me say these words because they aren't anything I ever uttered before. Never, ever. Yeah, I think God helped me a lot that day.
The day after Mother's Day, Renee decided to keep her promise to give recovery a try. She took a bus from Skid Row to Mitchell House. She walked through the door, and was given a guarantee of clothes, food, and a bunk. It was almost like being back in the military, except now she had to get sober. Renee remembers the first night, lying in her bunk, surrounded by her new roommates. It sure beat sleeping on a cardboard box.
A sense of peace seemed to be here. You know, the smell of, a fabric softener or washing powder, that was so much different because the smell in the drug game has a certain odor of urine, there's death odor, so to come into an atmosphere that gave not only the appearance of clean, but you smelled clean.
Renee served for 4 years at Pease Air Force Base in New Hampshire. After she was discharged, her introduction to crack began innocently. Some of her softball teammates invited her to try some after a game. Renee then suffered from an addiction so fierce, she lost her house, her husband, and custody of her two boys. 11% of homeless veterans are women, but it's a population that's growing, and the odds of full recovery from the substance addiction many of them face aren't good.
And I know what it is to be homeless and be on drugs and go through that whole routine to see someone go back out there. You know, it hurts, but the reality of this field and this disease is only 25% people that come in here stay sober. So your odds are against you from Jump Street. I'm not supposed to be sober. Why am I sober? I consider it a miracle.
Renee encountered what she believed was another miracle when she was asked to lead the women's program at Mitchell House.
One more time, they're taking a chance with me. They took the chance with me being a receptionist. They took a chance with putting me in the accounting department with all their money. And now they're putting me over here, taking the chance that I could help people with their lives. I came from this house. I graduated from this house. And I'm a veteran. You know, I think all of that gives the clients hope.
Mitchell House provides daily treatment and a home for 8 women veterans for up to 2 years. When residents finish the 12-step process and are ready to move out, counselors like Renee look for VA housing vouchers and work opportunities and try to reconnect them with their families. Renee leads group therapy in the living room. Some women sit with their hands in their heads, some lean forward and interrupt frequently. A tissue box always sits on the coffee table.
But do I know who I am? No. I know who I'm not. I'm no longer homeless downtown. Right? I'm no longer using. I'm no longer doing, turning tricks. Right? I'm no longer staying up all night long. Who am I? Well, I'm a mother. I have a job. I'm a counselor to you guys. I can be a friend. Right? I can be a daughter. I can be a sister now. I'm a role model. Do I know who I am? Not to the end. I need to stay in conscious contact with my higher power.
I just don't want to wind up in the pit of the pit again.
Then you're going to have to change.
After long, tough sessions with residents, Renee still has to deal with the administrative demands of running Mitchell House, moving graduates into veteran housing, and filling empty beds with new vets.
All right, great job, okay? I really appreciate your help this week. All right.
Renee has to be careful that she makes time to take care of herself, too, to see her sponsor and to look after her own recovery.
So we're looking at the 22nd. That's next.
Renee started her recovery with the hopes of giving a good Mother's Day gift to her mom. But now she knows the gift was to herself. Renee wears a gold charm necklace around her neck with the number 7 to mark the years that have passed since that first Mother's Day.
I wear my number with much pride because there's a lot of pain in this. There's a lot of feelings in this, a lot of hard work to get this number. So I appreciate it. It's like my gift every year to myself.
Each week, Renee tries to carve out time for herself, but she's got open beds in the house, and it's her mission to fill them with women just like her. Emily Frost, Annenberg Radio News.
The Asian and Pacific Islander population grew 30% in California over the last 10 years. Census data released this week shows that Asians and Pacific Islanders make up 15.5% of Californians. The numbers for this demographic grew faster than the total state growth. Population in California grew by 10% since 2000. Smitha Bondade has more.
The Asian and Pacific Islander population grew 30% in California over the last 10 years. Census data released this week shows that Asians and Pacific Islanders make up 15.5% of Californians. The numbers for this demographic grew faster than the total state growth. Population in California grew by 10% since 2000. Smitha Bondade, Annenberg Radio News.
Students in Madison, Wisconsin are urging students nationwide to support teachers and unions. They're calling for a nationwide school walkout tomorrow. I spoke with Maxwell Love from the United Council from the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
I mean, we would love to see the entire, you know, nation walking out in solidarity with Wisconsin, but it's not even necessarily about that. It's about the fact that this is just the start. And if Governor Walker, if Mr. Walker can get away with what he's doing here, it will spread to the other states. And this is an attack on education, it's an attack on health care, it's an attack on the working class people of the state. And, you know, hopefully people all across the nation will realize that and walk out tomorrow. And if not tomorrow, you know, there's plenty of other actions that'll be planned in the near future.
Can you tell me exactly what your group is protesting?
Basically, students. At first, you know, our biggest issue was collective bargaining and knowing that our teachers are going to be directly affected by this and that their pension plans will be going up, their health care payments will be going up, and we saw this as a direct attack on our teachers. And now that the budget's been released and there's a $1 billion cut to K-12 education, we're starting to incorporate all of these attacks on, you know, basically your everyday citizen of the state of Wisconsin. We're incorporating that into our mission. To fight back against all the cuts.
Right, and so tell me more about what you guys have planned to keep protesting this.
We're trying to move on, I don't want to say necessarily more radical, but we're moving to different tactics that are outside of the comfort zone, I guess you could say, of our state legislature. And there's been committees that are forming and talk of a general strike. There's been talk that teachers and TAs at our university might go on strike. The biggest thing for me, and it brought tears to my eyes today, actually, I was walking to the Capitol, and right in the center, there was at least 50 middle school students, and I just thought to myself, you know, I really don't think we'll understand the full impact of what's going on today in Wisconsin, you know, in these other Midwest cities where this is going on, until the people that are protesting here, these students have, you know, there's something that's been awoken inside of them. And I think that, like, until we see these people, they'll be taking back the Senate. They'll be taking back the nationwide halls of government. And until we see that effect, we really will not understand what's being created here. And I just think that's the best thing, is that our young people are learning about what it means to be civically engaged.
That's Maxwell Love from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. President Obama hosted the first White House Bullying Prevention Conference today. The White House has committed more resources to addressing the problem after a rash of bully-related suicides this fall. Reporter Emily Frost spoke to some experts about cyber and teen bullying. You can hear that story on AnnenbergRadio.org. And now we check in with Christine Borman to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hey, Christine, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Tonight we've got local reaction after a congressional hearing this morning about the radicalization of American Muslims. And Lindsay Lohan returned to court again today. Find out what the judge said and when she could be back in court again. And 141 medical marijuana dispensaries were ordered to shut down immediately, and others are still waiting to hear their fates in the future. Tune in to Annenberg TV News tonight at 6 p.m.
Thanks, Christine. And that's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Laurel Galanter, Stephanie Guzman, and Carl Nickenig. Christine Trang is our producer. The executive producer is Jessica Flores. And for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Megan Dickey.